Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Tech Done Different Podcast with Ted Harrington. Do you follow the pack or challenge the status quo? Join Ted as he explores how to succeed by going against conventional wisdom. You'll hear leaders in technology and security tell stories about how they achieve their success by doing things differently. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Tech Done Different. As always, I'm your host, Ted Harrington. And with me here today is a very special guest, a dear friend of mine, somebody that I've known and cherished for very many years. And I'd like to welcome to the show Sarah Robinson. Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Ted. I'm psyched to be here. Excited for the conversation.
Totally. So Sarah is the privacy risk manager in the general counsel's office for Facebook, and she's joining us here today, not necessarily as a representative of Facebook, but certainly as somebody who works in big tech and can give us some insights for, you know, from the inside of big tech and hopefully help us think a little bit differently about some of the emerging issues right now. So I wanna get right into the meat of a question I'm dying to ask you and hear your take on it. So when we think about the sort of times that we live in right now, you know, we just went through a major election cycle. It was highly contested, and certainly some issues came out about the intersection of technology and politics. And without, I don't want our conversation to be political, because we certainly don't want to alienate, you know, 50% of the audience, but I want to talk more about the, I guess, societal implications of technology. And so the simple question that is probably very difficult to answer is, from your viewpoint, working inside of big tech, what are the implications of banning a sitting US president from a tech platform?
So it's a really interesting question. And before we get into anything crazy, I just want to mention, I obviously don't speak for Facebook. I'm not here in a professional sort of capacity as a spokesperson for them. So I'll just sort of lay that out there. All my views expressed here are my own. So I think that you're asking a really interesting and super timely question, Ted. I think the first thing I'd say before getting to that specific part, specific question, is there's essentially no global parliamentary system or legislature that's ever going to be able to keep up with cyber. Like, you know that, all of your listeners know that. I mean, it's just not possible, right? So in lieu of that, I think, you know, what governments are doing more and more around the world at both like the sort of local level, whether it's states in the US or smaller jurisdictions regionally around the world, or at the federal level, is they're, you know, requiring frameworks that are broader. In some cases, they might require certifications or, you know, something tantamount to various types of audit reports and things like that. But those requirements aren't super prescriptive. And if they were, they'd effectively kill business and or, you know, be outdated within the matter of months. There's just no way for those kinds of requirements to keep pace with all the things that are happening in the digital sort of innovative world that we live in. So I think that really leads to many organizations essentially needing to figure out, how in the world do we figure out some of these details around security, privacy, essentially what I call data risk management. You know, they're having to figure out some of the details on their own. To your specific question about implications of banning a sitting president, I will say that, you know, it's publicly been written about quite a bit that Facebook has launched an oversight board to that individuals around the world can really submit questions to about whether or not content should be kept up on the platform. And, you know, I think it's a really interesting concept, right? It's almost like, I want to say it almost like is like an appellate court for the public to apply to and say, hey, like, we didn't like this, or we think this is wrong, or it's too much, or whatever the concern might be. And the board is full of ethicists and policymakers and really interesting, innovative folks. So I guess I'd say the implications are, from my perspective, a little bit more interesting around, like, what does this mean for business and how do they make decisions about, you know, a world that is just fundamentally not easy to regulate.
Yeah, it's interesting we're talking about regulation right now, because I personally have a hard time with thinking about regulation in that, you know, regulation doesn't inherently deliver security or privacy yet. Right. Without it, the free market doesn't always drive those things. I like to prefer to think the free market will do that, but
sure,
it just isn't the reality. And so it sounds like that's part of what you just identified as well. And you talked about this idea of maybe a board that is, I guess, a body sort of that straddles between the two, right? It's made up of people in the real world who have viewpoints and areas of expertise in order to deal with this, but they're not like, or maybe I should ask this as a question, but it seems to me like they're not influenced by politics. It's more of the issues at hand. Is that what you're suggesting?
So I'm not an expert on the board, and it is brand new. What I can say is that, you know, they're not looking at these cases based on, you know, legal schema that I'm aware of, right? I mean, they're really trying to look at from a global perspective of, you know, what decisions should be made on this global platform that impacts so many people and the lives of so many people. So, but they have no official tie to a regulatory body in any capacity. It's actually interestingly set up as its own separate legal entity, I believe. But again, I'm not a total expert on the insight, the nitty gritty. But I just think it's really fascinating, right? If you know, we can't look to government, and arguably we may not want to look to government to tell us what we want to do, right, in all these different security and privacy situations. You know, really means that we have to figure out some of this on our own. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? No one's going to know more about your applications or your systems or your infrastructure than you do, right? And just having a sort of a inflexible framework tell you, hey, put this here, you know, harden that there, right? Like, that doesn't necessarily, you know, make you actually secure, make you actually a great steward of personal information. Right? It means that you're abiding by something that's written in a book. So,
and abiding,
I mean,
by
would
something
you
that
say
took...
that there's any framework out there that actually makes people secure from a private, from a security perspective?
Well, I guess it depends. So the perspective that I think about it on is the bar, like thinking about where is the bar. And when you look at things like IoT, you know, Internet of Things, where there has not been regulation for a very long time, and the free market, the forces in a free market had not guided that industry to really emphasize security. Without regulation, security and privacy probably were never going to improve. So there is an example of where now these new regulations are in fact driving some improvement, but then there's other areas where I think maybe PCI is a good example, which regulates credit card information, where that's very, very thorough. It's very evolved and mature, but like every company that suffers a security breach, every single one of them has some sort of PCI compliance. And so it's like, well, what did we really achieve here? So what's your take on that? The fact that, I mean, you already alluded to the idea that governments and regulations can't keep up, but is that, do you think, because we don't have enough technologists that are in the regulatory community, or is it a different problem?
That's a great question. And I think the short answer is that there aren't enough technologists in the regulatory community. You know, that's still I think technology on the level that folks are used to, certainly in Silicon Valley, and definitely in any SOC related, security operations center related type field, you know, that's a whole other level of technology than many of my friends and former colleagues that work on either Capitol Hill or in the U.S. federal government. Certainly can't comment, I guess, for other governments. But I also just honestly, Ted, think it's a function of how policy is made, right? Like there's this really great old YouTube video that's got like a cartoon piece of legislation, and it's called How a Bill Becomes a Law. And there's a jingle, and it's, you know, I don't know, maybe runs like 4 minutes, if that. And it's potentially overly simplified, but it I think also does a good job of helping people understand, hey, you know, there are checks and balances in the United States, and that takes time. You know, it takes time to pass legislation, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think part of it is certainly related to who is in the room having conversations about the way things should be changed. But also I happen to think that the most important part of like security and privacy, again, from my perspective, I think of all of this under a bigger umbrella of data risk management. So I think of privacy being one component part, security being another major component part, and kind of a Venn diagram when done well. And, you know, things in that world just move so quickly. They're never gonna be able to keep up from a legislative perspective, A. And B, you know, I don't know how much I'd want them to, right? I think that there's a role to play, and that's really, it can be very important in lots of ways. But, you know, I think this world really does require a certain amount of agility and a certain amount of elasticity from both like an organizational perspective and from, you know, who are the people that you have in your organization working on these topics, right? Can they approach these with the elasticity that the pace really requires?
I love it. Elasticity. It's like, I always think about the ultimate hacker is squirrels, because they adapt to everything that you try to keep them from getting to the bird feeder. They know they'll like climb things and they'll jump over things. They don't care because they're trying to survive. And that's in a way elasticity, right? It's like, it doesn't, as the environment shifts, they shift with it. So how do we help organizations that can sometimes be, especially in larger organizations and especially in anything that is government or nonprofit, you know, they tend to be a little more rigid in the everything. This isn't just a security commentary, but just like how business is done in those realms. How do we help those types of organizations be more elastic?
Gosh, if anyone wanted to take a plunge into that in a real way, I think that it would be a lifetime, perhaps, of a journey. But I think the short answer is really, you know, is the leadership willing to embrace a new way of thinking of things, thinking and doing things, right? I had the honor of serving Fortune 50 and Fortune 100 companies as an advisor, both on incident response matters and privacy, you know, helping to build privacy programs post GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation passed in the EU, and went into effect at May 25th of 2018. And from that experience, and some of it was public, but most of it was private, you know, there was a huge difference, Ted, between the companies that were checking a box, right? And the companies that were thinking, hey, how can I slingshot my organization into a position of being able to like actually thoughtfully and effectively use the currency that I have, right? And I, you know, plenty of people have written and talked about like data as, you know, the next currency or the now currency. And really what a lot of these laws are trying to get organizations to do is figure out what on earth you have. How did you get it? Who are you giving it to? Who has access to it? How are you sharing it, right? Who has control over any of this data? And for organizations that may be a little bit older, or maybe nonprofits, or perhaps from more highly regulated organizations, I would suggest taking a hard look at what are the elements of just institutional red tape that would hinder new ideas or fresh perspectives. And then I would go out and get talent that really can tell the difference between buzzwords and actually making an impact, you know, making a real strategic impact.
I love it. So you've mentioned a couple times these different ideas, and you've introduced them obviously separately, privacy and security. And when you and I were chatting the other day, you mentioned that, you know, sometimes privacy and security are maybe too siloed. Can you tell me a little bit about your viewpoint on this issue?
Sure. I mean, it's funny because I remember the other day you said something like security is a team sport. Mm-hmm. And I love that, not just because I consider myself kind of big aficionado of sports and athletes around the world, but, you know, my personal motto is life is a team sport. And I think that this is actually from my perspective, I'm obviously biased. I think this is the best way to attack both security and privacy challenges. There are many organizations across all sorts of industries that really, you know, they have their hardcore security people and they sit, you know, way over here on the left, and they have, you know, they sort of think, oh, privacy, it sounds very compliancy. I'm going to put it in legal, you know, just as a matter of course. And they're going to sit way over here on the right. And it's not always very frequent that either of those groups is spending enough time with the business to really understand, hey, what are the needs there? What is a reasonable risk tolerance? How do I tie my program and my efforts to, you know, A, the risk tolerance of the organization, and B, the business needs? Because at the end of the day, you know, compliance should be a floor, not a ceiling, but it also should just be a kick in the shins to help figure out, hey, how do I play a more of a medium and long-term game as opposed to only a short-term game? And I think, unfortunately, especially for public companies, right, C-suite folks are really pressured hard to constantly return short-term gains. But the world of privacy and security, as I call it, right, data risk management, that's a medium to long-term game all day long.
Yeah, and it's really interesting too what you're I'm hearing the way that you're answering the question. That at first I was thinking about it in terms of privacy and security are these two different things that they need to collaborate more. And you introduced this third element, which I 100% agree with, which is that not only do those two need to play with each other, they need to play with the business, and the business needs to play with them. So how have you seen it in your experience where the business can effectively capitalize on privacy and security? Because one of the challenges that I've definitely seen are a lot of companies really struggle. And I'm saying companies, but this issue is beyond just commercial businesses. This is, I mean, across the board, nonprofits, governments, et cetera. They struggle to identify and measure risk, or not risk, sorry, to identify and measure the return on investment. Right? Because it's often seen as like, well, there's this thing that could happen, and so maybe I should spend some money and effort to make it not happen. But like, if it doesn't happen, did I actually succeed? How have you seen people successfully deal with that?
Honestly, that's a really complicated topic. We could probably have a whole conversation just about that. You know, there's certainly some fixed costs related to both that you can, that, you know, economists that are much better at numbers than I am can certainly run the numbers on for each individual business line or organization based on industry and threat vectors, both from a privacy perspective and from a security perspective. But if really we boil your question down, Ted, to like, how can the business leverage what in many cases, whether it's public perception, especially on the privacy front, and or regulation is really forcing them to do around, you know, cleaning up data, access, sharing, et cetera. I think the tough answer is that you're not going to see the ROI, which makes it hard to measure. You're not going to see the ROI until you have sort of done a fairly good job of sweeping house. So I used to talk about some of this world as if, you know, you walk into a warehouse and the lights are off and it's really, really cluttered, and someone hands you a pen light. And they're like, okay, get across, you know, walk across this warehouse. And you know, the world of privacy and security can sometimes be like, oh, well, I'm flashing this pen light over here and I'm flashing this pen light over here, but I just broke a lamp and I'm about to, like, you know, have a yard sale in front of me, because I just can't see enough. And I think, unfortunately, that means that there's no easy answer to this. But how can the business better leverage? I think it really is incumbent upon them to actively engage with the experts that they're employing in these two fields, right? So I've encountered many business owners who are basically say, well, this is just, you know, compliance related, or this is just security related. You know, come to me with a number and, you know, let me know what other boxes I can check, whether it's a compliance report or something with a third party or whatever. But once the business owners really start to understand, hey, wait a second, you mean I can do all of this other sort of, you know, it could be data analytics as long as I aggregate or anonymize data appropriately. Wait, you mean that I can actually make better decisions about how many people I employ and where and how and when, as long as I'm running, you know, sort of the crunching the numbers appropriately and giving adequate notice and getting adequate consent from whether it's my employees or someone else. And you can't really understand that if you're saying, hey, this is really unfun. I don't want to hear about it. You know, I don't want to go to the dentist. That's terrible. You know, it's no fun and it just costs me a lot of time and money and pain. So I think it's really leaning in to understand the particulars of how this impacts your specific business and your specific industry, because I guarantee you there's a way for you to slingshot your organization to the top and really being able to monetize the data that you have. But you can't do that if you don't know what you have.
Yeah, I love the pen light metaphor, because I'm literally seeing in my mind's eye right now the you know, a dark warehouse. That's a really cool way to think about it. And I guess, you know, it triggers like 100 other questions, like, well, how do we get a bigger flashlight? How do we turn on the overhead lights? How do we, you know, how can we better operate in the dark? And I guess those are certainly the challenges that organizations struggle with. But maybe it also seems to me like the problem is even before that, right? It's not even yet, well, we need a different type of flashlight in order to see better. They're like, I don't know what room I'm in. I have no idea what's in here. And yeah. How do we deal with that? Right.
Right. And like, if you think about also, Ted, I'd love your thoughts on, you know, when you think about IoT devices, they obviously have to connect back in, not always, but usually connect back into some sort of mothership in some way, shape or form. Right. And how do you deal with, you know, the data risk challenges from that perspective, when you don't know, you know, are the pipes connected with duct tape internally, right? Like with the, you know, I'm saying the mothership, but it could be obviously whatever the primary organization is. You know, there are also, I've had plenty of clients that can't, most of my former clients couldn't give me a list of every application that they had in their network or their system. And that's really, you know, makes it very hard to figure out what room you're in. Are there pipes that are leaking? Are there pipes that were just like hammered together and then duct taped? You know, it makes it pretty tricky.
Yeah. And then even sometimes the question is, irrespective of what room we're in or what the pipes may look like, it's what do we care about that's in this room? And that's one of the big things that, to your question about IoT, but it's bigger, I think, than IoT even, that a lot of organizations struggle with, is they, even within a company, not necessarily everybody is all aligned on what you're trying to protect. And I use this metaphor all the time because I think it's so vivid. There was this really dumb, I mean, it was a really dumb commercial. It's like a Geico commercial. It's a Geico commercial. And a few years ago or whatever, and this guy's in his whatever garage or something, and he finds this lamp, rubs the, you know, he's cleaning the lamp, and a genie pops out and says, you get a wish. And the guy says, oh, great, I'll have $1 million. And clearly he meant like, I want $1 million.
Sure.
And the genie says, $1 million, granted, and gives him 1 million male deer. Like, well, that's also a buck, right? But
sure.
You know, that's obviously it's a silly metaphor, but that kind of thing is what a lot of companies struggle with, without knowing it, right? Where they're like, well, this arm of the company thinks that we're protecting data. And this arm of the company thinks we're protecting the reputation of the brand. And this arm of the company thinks we're protecting some other thing. And until they actually speak to each other on and gain that common knowledge and common ground, like how's the team ever going to go all in the same direction? Have you seen that
right.
happening?
I've definitely seen it. And Ted, I think it really shines light on anyone that you can find that really does have street cred in the area that you're looking for expertise, that is a good translator. You've known me forever. I am sure that you chuckled when you found out I got into cyber. Because I mean, when I was in college, I could barely turn on and off a computer. And I was just glad that it worked. Right. I'm sorry to say, like, I mean, I didn't know anything about technology in any significant manner. To this day, sometimes I still need help from people, doing fun things, but, I really got my first job by saying, listen, you all can hire some of the best technology talent in the world, but do you have anyone that is focused on translating between these really talented technologists and resource allocators, right? And that is a skill that I think is a little bit undervalued in higher echelon conversations, because there's so much focus on the numbers, or there's so much focus on give me some discrete bullet points on data points or something like that. And at the end of the day, a lot of these organizations have fiefdoms, and those fiefdoms exist and get created by people. And you know, you can't really breach those or tie them together or get them to work effectively together without, at the very least, getting everyone on the same page, much less communicating in a way that everybody at least understands the conversation.
I love that you use that word fiefdoms, because I see that issue play out across large, and definitely not in small companies, but in large enterprises. It happens all the time where the security mission sometimes becomes secondary or maybe even tertiary or worse in terms of priorities when an influential leader, takes over a new department or whatever, and they're like, well, I'm going to now create this thing that, builds fame for me, which I actually think those are really good things. We shouldn't shy away from that. Like, powerful people at enterprises, they should build fame for themselves so that they can do more. I totally support that. But what I see happen in security sometimes, I'm curious to see if you've seen how to overcome this, because I see it all the time and I want to make it stop, where that is what happens. A powerful person comes into a position, they're responsible for the security mission, but the way they go about it winds up being more of a, like, almost like political land grab than it does an effective way to improve security. Have you seen that happen? And do you have any ideas for how to make it work better?
I have seen it happen quite a lot. And so I feel your pain on this. Unfortunately, I'm going to give you a real attorney response, which is it depends. it can kind of really depend on the organization, the industry, and again, the sort of political realities of, in business, people don't like to, in my experience, people do not tend to like to use the word political. But I think politics is just the interaction between human beings. And so I think it's everywhere and not a dirty term, but, in any case, what are some of the best ways to deal with it? I think, first and foremost is helping that leader understand, why does it matter, right? And how does this actually help them on their own journey? The answer can depend a little bit on your role, like where are you in the organization, right? Are you sort of at the C-suite level helping to make various decisions, but you're concerned about the trajectory because of this person that maybe owns a security mission? Some of that really has to do with making sure that the business is aligned with the objectives. In my, in my experience, the business really does both own the risk as well as often the purse strings. And so You know, if you can work to make sure the business sees the value either in the security mission and or in, you know, this, all this data risk and privacy work, I think that can be the fastest way to try and, forge a pathway forward. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. Agreed with that, and trying to align, like, how does this help you? Right. The person you're trying to convince, let me frame this all in ways. How can this help you? And a friend of mine, he wrote this incredible book called All About Them. And it's a book about marketing principles, but the principles I think are applicable to like so many parts of life, because the core argument is no one cares about you. Everyone cares about themselves. And sure. So if you want to help enact change, you have to frame things in language and ways that speak to the other person, because that's what the other person cares about. And that's effectively what you just recommended.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, there are different ways to do that. You know, sometimes it requires, you know, really getting a strong message to the board. Sometimes it requires reminding folks that, hey, the mission of this organization is very much tied to our end users or our customers or, you know, whomever. You know, I think one of the things that made me so passionate about both security and in particular as I got more and more into privacy shenanigans was that this is really both the personal and the professional, at least for me. And I know it is for you. Like, we all use these products, whether, you know, we're talking about big tech or we're talking about retail or a financial institution, right? You know, the decisions made inside of these organizations impact, you know, everything from, you know, the folks down the street. You know, I walk into a coffee shop and in the middle of, I don't know, Detroit, somewhere I don't live. And then I walk out and 5 minutes later, I get an email. How on earth did that happen? I didn't give them my email. I didn't give them permission, you know, to grab my email and so on and so forth. Right. And so a lot of these issues, I think can very easily be tied to our real lives. And that is also another tactic, right? So especially if you're more junior you know, trying to influence the decision maker, number one, I think, would be to help them understand how is this going to help them in their vision or in their soft power within the organization. And I think number two is helping them understand, hey, how is this going to hit our, you know, our main constituents? It might be, again, a customer, it could be an end user, it could be any number of different people.
Love it. Well, Sarah, I feel like you and I, as we have actually done many times, could talk all day and all night. Unfortunately, we're running out of time here. What sort of parting wisdom or advice might you give our listeners here as they're trying to think about how can they do tech differently? How can they do it better? How can they think about security and privacy in some tangible, actionable ways?
Gosh, way to really end on a tough note, Ted. I think I'd say what's most important really is to take a minute to think about what are you actually trying to do in your organization? Like, what is the actual goal of your organization? And how can the data that you have in your organization better serve that goal? And approach both privacy and security with that in mind. I think it sounds very high level, but again, if you can get people on your team or into advise your team that really aren't just talking in buzzwords and they don't just give you pretty PowerPoints, but can actually help you apply those principles best for like fit for purpose, right? I think that is probably the best way to make your tech life from a business perspective different.
Awesome. Well, you're amazing. You know that I believe that already. I think all our listeners now already recognize that you're amazing. So Sarah, thank you so much for spending some time together today.
Absolutely, Ted. I love it. Thanks so much.
Of course. And everybody else, if you want to learn more about the show or request to appear as a guest yourself, just go to tedharrington.com/podcast and we'll catch you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tech Done Different podcast with Ted Harrington. If you learned something new and this conversation made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.